Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Dayton Tolbert Show. I am your host, Dayton Tolbert. Back again, man. I told y'all last week I was going to give y'all two shows in 1 week. I didn't quite make it, but I'm a few days late, but I'm back because I want to talk about Mea Culpa, Tyler Perry's number one movie in the world right now, or at least number one on Netflix. I don't know. But I want to talk about it, you know, and there's a lot to talk about with it. And, you know, it's I mean, I'm not going to lie to y'all. It's not going to be a two-hour show. It's not going to be anything crazy because, you know, it just is a horrible, horrible movie. But, and I'll talk about why I say it's horrible, but there are some things that can be taken away from it as far as learning opportunities and things that we can look at to help avoid many of these uncomfortable circumstances some of you guys find yourselves in. Same with last week. Last week, Risa Tisa. You know, we talked about how to avoid dealing with a psycho, how to avoid dealing with one, but also how to avoid attracting one. You know, I do life coaching, as you guys know, and that's really one of the main reasons that women reach out, you know, at trclifecoaching.com or askdayton@gmail, and they say, well, you know, I'm only attracting the same types of men. I'm only dealing with the liars, the dogs, the cheaters, and the players. And I say, well, you know, let's look at some things. And, you know, in fact, if you heard the last show, two shows ago, on why men cheat, you know, I discussed and broke down the three stages that men go through, the dog stage, the player stage, and the ready to settle down stage. And we talked about how men like Legion, you know, are in that dog and player stage. A man like what's the name? Trevante Rhodes. What's the guy's name in the movie? I forget his name in the movie, but probably because I was half asleep throughout most of it, I had to go back and rewatch it just to be able to do this show. But you know, those types of men. If you're only attracting those types of men, the liars, the dogs, the cheaters, the psychos, the scammers, you know, definitely reach out to me, man. We can talk about it. But I wanna break down some key components of this movie, and hopefully you guys can you know, learn a few things from it. If you missed any of the shows that I just mentioned or any show, check out the archives at DayTolbertShow.com. Archives are available on iTunes, iHeartRadio, wherever you guys listen to podcasts. So, you know, Mea Culpa, you know, let's talk. I mean, I'll be honest with you. Like I told y'all, I am a movie buff, okay? Like, I watch – people who know me know, like, that's what I like to do. You know, me and the wife watch a lot of movies, but I just like to watch movies by myself or with the kids or whatever the case is. But I love movies I've seen. You could name pretty much any movie, and I probably – if I haven't seen it, it's probably because I don't want to see it and don't plan on seeing it. I just watch a lot of movies. So this movie, you know, and I'm saying that because just to kind of emphasize, I watch movies, and this probably the worst movie I've ever seen in my life. Not just the worst Tyler Perry movie, but the worst movie. You know, and I really had to sit back and think, and I'm talking about, you know, I watch some movies on Tubi. I've seen some of the worst movies, and this was up there. You know, it's definitely up there at the top of the list. I'm very disappointed with Tyler Perry. One of the reasons why is because I generally like Tyler Perry movies. You know, I'm not that guy that's just going to bash, you know, everything that he comes out. I'm not a hater. Like, if, you know, you come out with a good movie, you know, and it's good, I'm not going to say it's bad if it's not bad. Like, just to give you an example, as far as some Tyler Perry films that I enjoyed, The Family That Prays. I really liked that movie. You know, it was very entertaining. You know, Temptation, excellent movie. I did a show on Temptation. One of my favorite shows in the history of this show was my analysis on the movie Temptation and how a lot of women, you know, have affairs and get caught up and have to deal with the consequences of those actions. But, you know, check, just Google Temptation on the Dayton Tolbert Show and listen to that show if you ever want to just go back about 10 years to listen to an old classic show. That was a really good one, but I enjoyed Temptation. I liked Acrimony. You know, I'm not a fan of Taraji P. Henson's acting. But, I mean, as far as the movie goes, you know, it wasn't a bad movie. I enjoyed the movie. Diary of a Mad Black Woman was probably my favorite Tyler Perry movie. I think that was just a great movie. Jazzman Blues, you know, recently, kind of not as popular as some of the other ones, but I thought that was very well done. Took us back to, you know, segregation and the civil rights movement and things like that. And, you know, I thought that was a really well done movie. You know, and a lot of people didn't like Alex Cross. I mean, Tyler Perry was in it. He wasn't really the greatest. He's not the greatest actor. But the movie itself was not a horrible movie, in my opinion. I'm just kind of letting you know I'm not a hater. Like, if a movie is good or I like the movie, I'll let you know I like the movie. But this movie, just like, the plot was not good. The acting was atrocious. I'm talking about some of the worst acting I've ever seen. Now, let me talk about actors. Like, when I think of, and I'm just going to talk about black, you know, obviously they're horrible act, you know, and of all races, but when I think of bad black actors, and you guys have heard me talk about these people, Beyoncé is at the top of the list, a horrible actress in my opinion. Mary J. Blige, I do not like as an actress. She's gotten better, but she's just not a good actress in my opinion. Method Man is not a good actor, in my opinion. Common might be the worst male actor I've ever seen in my life. I think he's, you know, just the worst. Candy Burris, horrible actress. But then, right, and those are just a few off the top of my head, but Kelly Rowland is a horrible actress. Like, she's literally, out of all those names, she would be right at the top of the list of as the worst possible actress. Like, if you watch great actresses like Alfre Woodard, like Angela Bassett, like Viola Davis, you know, and I'm just throwing out some names. Those are great actresses. You understand what I'm saying? Cicely Tyson, you know, you look at these women, like, there's not even a comparison. Like, and even the woman who plays, I mentioned this, Mississippi from P-Valley, who plays the wife of the district attorney. She's actually a good, I watch P-Valley. And if you watch P-Valley, just for context, she's a good actress in this film and on P-Valley. Look at the contrast between her and Kelly Rowland. It's not even like, if you study acting, if you're familiar with acting, Kelly Rowland is just not a good actress. And if you think she is, I would challenge you to go back and look at some of the work from some of these other actresses that we've discussed that I just named. She's just not, like, the only time I saw her act outside of this, I think, was in the last Freddy vs. Jason. I think it was Freddy vs. Jason. It was either Friday the 13th or Freddy vs. Jason. I believe it was Freddy vs. Jason, and she got killed, and Freddy ends up killing her, and he's like, "How sweet, dark meat." And he looks right at the camera, and then he stabs her up. You know, I thought that was just pure comedy. But if you watch that film, you know what I'm talking. Like, she was, like, horrible in Freddy vs. Jason. Horrible. And I don't know if she got acting lessons or what, but she's even more horrible now, 10, 15 years later. So I'm just giving you guys a little bit of background. This is interesting. Before I get into so that's the actresses and the actors in it. Trevante Rhodes is not horrible, horrible, but he's not great either. Like, he's not, you know what I mean? Like, he's not as bad as Method Man, but he's not a good actor, in my opinion. He was not good in this role. I really couldn't understand half the things he was saying, man. Like, it's like he was kind of mumbling, and it just wasn't a good performance, in my opinion. But one of the things I found interesting, I don't know if you guys heard about this, but Zayn, shout out to Zayn, from back in the day, she wrote a lot of really great, a lot of you guys' favorite books. Addicted was a really great book. She turned it into a movie starring Boris Cujo and what's the young woman's name? I forget the other actress's name that's in it. But that was also a very good story. And they developed it into a movie. And Zayn, you know, she's written a number of books. Erotica is what she specialized in. Shout out to her. I had her as a guest on this show. I want to say at this point, how long ago was that? Maybe 10 years ago, I had Zayn on. And Zayn doesn't do a lot of interviews, you know. So shout out to you guys who've been following me for some time. And you listened to my interview with Zayn. It was really good. I had her on for about at least an hour. And we talked about how she gets her inspiration for these stories and just the process and what goes into it, and how it gets so explicit, you know, like these stories and these situations that her characters find themselves in. So it was a really good conversation. So shout out to Zayn. But she posted on social media recently that, in fact, I should have put it up, but I don't have it in front of me. But basically she says something to the effect of, actually, you know, I'm going to see if I can find it real quick. I have it somewhere. Of course, when I'm live on the air, I won't be able to find it, you know, quickly. But where is it? You know what? Don't worry about it. I'll paraphrase it. But basically, she was saying that she wrote a story, you know, in one of her erotica anthologies where, you know, she has a story called Mea Culpa, you know? And so I guess some people were challenging. Now, I haven't read it, you know, okay? I haven't read it. I don't know how true that – I'm sure it's true, but I don't know how similar her story is with – oh, here it is right here. I want to read to you exactly what she said, okay? This is what Zayn said, okay? And this is on one of these blogs. This is what Zayn says. She says, I feel like I need to make a brief statement. The film adaptation of my novel, Addicted, was released in 2014 and is called Addicted. There seems to be some confusion about that at the moment. Charisse Nesbitt and I were the executive producers, and it was directed by Billy Woodruff. In addition, and possibly adding to the confusion, I wrote a short erotic story called Mea Culpa in my book, Z-Rated, that came out in 2012. Both are still readily available. Thanks and have a good evening. So that's what Zayn said. Now, I just find that interesting because, let's be honest, most of you guys and people in general who tuned in to watch this movie really watched it because of the erotica sex scene with the body paint, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. But that's why a lot of people tuned into it. Now again, I haven't read this book from Z Rated by Zayn, but she writes erotica. The short story is called Mea Culpa. Is it possible Perry stole Zayn's story? Yo, let me find out, Tyler Perry. But again, I don't know. I don't want to put that on. I don't know, you know, what that story is about. I haven't read Zayn's story. But that would be crazy if Tyler Perry stole his erotica story from Zayn, the queen of erotica. That would be crazy to even think about. But I'm sure there's a logical explanation for all of this. We'll see. We'll see what happens. I'll keep you guys posted if I hear any new information about it. But so that's what happened with Zayn and the Tyler Perry thing. But this story to me, and I'm about to get into the plot of it, but it made no sense. I'm an author, you know. I write stories. Shout out to you guys who read my classic novel, The Love We Had, which was released in 2006, award-winning novel. You know, shout out to y'all, man. But I feel like it's a classic love story, a tragic love story. And again, I'm like I said, I just didn't like the story. I thought it made no sense. So I'm saying that to say, like, when I when I look at story, I watch movies, but because I am a creator, because I'm an author, I'm in tune with the story and the plot. That's what gets me, is the thought process that goes into the characters, character development. And it just was horrible. I'm very disappointed in Tyler Perry. And again, I'm telling you, like Zane, and I give her all the props in the world because, yes, she writes about sex and erotica, but the stories behind the erotica are very thought out, very well thought out, you know, very intricate. This was not intricate. You know, over the years, I've interviewed tons and tons and tons of your favorite authors who've written great stories. This was a horrible story. And I'm just telling you because I don't want to seem like I'm a hater. I'm just hating on Tyler. But nah, I'll tell you a good story if I, you know, if I see one. But this ain't it. And I really question. My social media, you know, over the last week, is like so many people saying, wow, that's such a great story, such a great movie. I'm like, what? You think this is great? Like, what do you normally watch if you think this is great? But let's jump into the plot of it. So first, let's start with the title. I'll be honest with y'all. The best part of this movie is the title, which is a play on words. I don't know if you guys know about this, but mea culpa. You know, the phrase is not mea culpa, it's mea culpa, which is a Latin phrase with the origin meaning through my fault. It says it can be used as an interjection to say my bad or as a noun to refer to an apology or an acceptance of guilt. It comes from a prayer of confession in the Catholic Church, but is also used in a more general or legal sense. So mea culpa, you know, so if you say, you know, that's what they would say back in the day, like, oh, mea culpa, I'm guilty, I'm sorry, my bad, you know, I take responsibility for my actions. So that's, again, that's a Latin phrase with the pronunciation of mea culpa. So the title of this film is a play on words because the main character's name is Mia. So people are pronouncing it mea culpa, but it's actually the correct pronunciation is mea culpa. All right, so that's just a little bit of a history lesson for those of you who may have been unfamiliar with the play on words. You know, it's even kind of like a double entendre, or it alludes to Kelly Rowland's role in it. You know, I mean, like she has to take some responsibility for her actions in the film. So that is the mea culpa from Mia. It's mea culpa. Mia is guilty, you know, if you guys catch the play on words. So that, in my opinion, was the most clever part of this entire film. He probably put more work, more thought into the title than he did the entire plot. Well, let's talk about the plot and what I thought about. Like I told you I was going to come back because I didn't want to wait too long. I didn't want to, you know, let too much time pass. But I did want to give you guys some time to watch the film if you hadn't watched it. But, yeah, it's just, you know. We're going to talk about the real reason why everybody's so excited about mea culpa, okay? We're going to talk about what's really happening out here. But let's talk about the plot. When I'm watching the film, I see a lot of similarities between Mia and Risa. You know, again, if you guys checked out my special on Risa Tisa and how to avoid dealing with a psycho, you will see a lot, and I did a whole two-hour in-depth analysis of all 52 of those chapters. If you did not listen to that show, you do not want to not listen to it because I really broke down every aspect of the entire story. So check it out. But I found a lot of similarities between Mia and Risa. What was the main similarity between Mia and Risa? I would say insecurity. You know, if you looked at Risa Tisa, she had a lot of insecurities, and now she's doing the interviews on Tamron Hall and other places, and she's talking about, you know, how she ignored different red flags and things that she dealt with. She responded to Charlamagne's comment about the Big Back Brigade and the Big Back, you know, that whole ideology and how she was offended by it. And, you know, but she struggles with insecurity. And Mia also struggles with some insecurity, maybe not from a physical sense, but there was some insecurity there with her relationship, her marriage. And so one of the things you guys have to understand is that, and I say this on every show, when you are, as a woman, if you are living in and operating in a state of what I call emotional unavailability, you're only going to attract the liars, the dogs, the cheaters, and the players, and the psychos. What did Risa attract? What do these celebrities attract? The psychos. What have you attracted? The psychos, the liars, the dogs, the cheaters, the men and the dog in the player stage. And that's why we got to get to that root of the emotional unavailability and figure out, you know, where is this insecurity coming from? Where is this the emotional wall coming from, this guard that you have up? And that's how you change the type of men that you attract. And if you guys want more one-on-one, you know, feedback on exactly how to do that, that's when you go to trclifecoaching.com, you email me at askdaydon@gmail.com, and we get to the bottom of it. But be clear, both of these women are extremely emotionally unavailable for different reasons. But something else that I saw that they both have in common, they're both successful. You know, if you look at, you know, Mia, a successful attorney, you know, doing well financially. She's able to get these big, you know, contracts and, you know, represent these high-profile cases that pay, you know, thousands and maybe even millions of dollars. And, you know, so she's doing very well. Same with Risa. She was successful in her own right. But, again, those things don't matter. You know, those things don't matter in regards to what men seek in a wife. They don't matter when it comes to the grand scheme of things about who you will attract, your finances, your education, those things don't matter. You have to have the three things that these men seek in a wife, which is a great personality, a high level of respectability, and 100% emotional availability. You know, and I would just refer you to the definition of a great wife, the special I did at the end of last season. Just check that show out. You know, where I broke down exactly what it means to be a great wife, you know, and, and that's what we got to focus on. But, you know, like I said, very successful, both of them, but also both very emotionally unavailable. And because of that, it caused them both to overlook red flags. What did I tell you on the Risa Tisha show? I went through all the different, and there were a lot of them. I went through all the different red flags that she blatantly ignored. And then what happened? She ended up married to Legion. What happened with Mia? She overlooked a number of red flags. A number of red flags. What red flags did Mia overlook with this with her ex? Or excuse me, with her husband? Well, he cheated, for one, right? He cheated. You know, whether it was an emotional affair or whether it was flirting or whatever the case is, he was cheating, right? And that's something that they had gone to counseling to address. And but that, you know, that's a red flag, you know, and she overlooked that. A lot of women overlook that. I would encourage you to not overlook those types of things. Don't look at a man who's clearly in the dog stage, clearly in the player stage, and think, oh, we can go to counseling, and then this will magically transform him from the player stage to the ready to settle down stage, and then we can live happily ever after. That's not how it works. A woman can never take a man from one stage to the next. The progression from one stage to the next has to come organically on his own. A man has to realize on his own, I don't want to be a player no more. He's got to hit the big punt on him. I don't want to be a player anymore. And that has to happen organically within himself, not when he gets caught cheating with you. That's not how that works. That's never how that's going to work. okay? He has to one day wake up and be like, you know what? I'm ready for a good woman. And then he, you know, he works his way to finding a wife. But that needs to happen independently from you. If he gets caught cheating and he's in that player stage with you, he's not going to just transform magically to be this knight in shining armor that you prayed for. Okay? That's not how that works. God, that's not how God works. And the way we know, we can back that up with the Bible, is that if you pray for a man, the man, and a man comes into your life that's a player, or in the dog stage, in that player stage, is that a blessing from God or a soul tie from the devil? Think about it. That's the, God is not going to send you somebody that you're going to have to transform into a good man, a great man, a couple years after he beats you and cheats on you and lies to you and all this other stuff, and now you can live happily ever after 3 years, 4 years later. No, that's not how that works. That's not how God works. You know what I mean? God isn't going to send you a blessing that you got to, you know, let marinate for a good. No, that's not how that works. God isn't going to send you legion. God isn't going to send you another man's, another woman's husband. God is not going to send you Trevante Rhodes. Okay? That's, he's not going to send you that. I know you like the body paint. You know, paint with a twist. Okay? I'm sure you like that. I'm sure, you know, that looked like they had a good time. I'm sure y'all would have liked to have a good time. You said, shoot, I just went painting with a twist with my girlfriend, but didn't end like that. You know what I'm saying? I get it. That bottom sock drawer is, you know, getting more action than normal, you know, rabbit, bullet, you know, all types of things. God knows what y'all got down there, man. But that's not the answer. Trevante is not the answer. All right? Keep waiting. Be patient. You know, don't overlook the red flags. Don't become Risa. Don't be Mia. But what she did was, and this was, like I told you, she thought that going to counseling would help, it, which is interesting because that's the same thing Risa Tisa thought. It's like I'm doing back-to-back shows on the same topic. It's like the same person. It's like Risa thought, oh, yeah, I'm going to take Legion to counseling. Okay, that's a good idea. That'll work. Mia thought taking, you know, her husband to counseling would be a good idea. This guy had all types of other issues. He's a mama's boy, obsessed with his mom, left the counseling session early to go talk to his mom. Like, come on, man. He's cheating, you know, which clearly shows how he was viewing her. One of the things we look at is, you know, when we look at cheating, and again, check out the special I just did on why men cheat, where I broke down the real reasons that men cheat. But a lot of women look at the cheating in regards to how they're viewing these other women. But you need to be focusing on how he's viewing you. Cheating is indicative of how he views you. Most men don't cheat because of what another woman is giving him. The men are cheating because what you are not giving him. Now, don't hold on. Slow your roll. Don't. Before you stone me, I'm not saying it's your fault. Sometimes it is, and sometimes there are very distinct things that you're doing or not doing that cause a man to cheat. However, it's not always the case. Sometimes it's just the respect isn't there from him to you. He doesn't respect you. So he cheats on you. He doesn't love you, so he cheats on you. So it's not, a lot of times, most times, it doesn't have anything to do with the other person. She's just a willing participant, you know? But you got to get somebody who loves you and who respects you. And somebody, and this is most important, someone who loves and respects God. Because when he loves and respects God, that will directly influence how he treats you. You know, so you got to beg your man to go to church, and you know he's not really a Christian, and you know he's spiritual, and I'm using the air quotes there, but come on, that's probably not the best fit for you. especially if you yourself are a Christian woman who is seeking a Christian man. You probably don't want to settle for Trevante. You probably don't want to settle for Legion if you know deep down you are a Christian woman. But if you are lukewarm, then you're probably going to settle. And I told y'all this last week. What did Risa say? Why exactly did she overlook the red flags? She said, I just wanted it to be my turn. I just wanted it to be my turn. And she admits that she overlooked the red flags. One of the things I see, you know, one of the things we see in the film later on is that even though he had an emotional affair, this is probably a failure of Tyler Perry's writing, they didn't really elaborate on this. But who was the woman that he was playing the game with online? Looked like he was having a good time. You saw the pretty woman, her face up on the screen, and he's late night flirting with her, and they're laughing and joking. It's just like, is that okay? I mean, could that have been innocent? Okay. It could have been. But was it? Probably not. You know, these are the types of things that kind of go into respect, you know, or the lack of respect, I should say. And so, you know, that might have been the woman that he was cheating with. You know what I mean? But again, we'll never know because Tyler Perry didn't think that was important enough to, you know, to write about, to incorporate into the story. We don't know who that woman was. Maybe she was somebody, maybe she wasn't. But, you know, it doesn't matter. It was just a stupid movie. But there are, like I told y'all, there are some things that we can take away from the story to you know, help you guys understand this whole thing a little bit more. But one of the, like I told y'all, so they decide to go to the counseling. And I do marriage counseling. I do couples therapy. I do these things. And one of the things that I have found is, and I told y'all this last week, is that you can't fix a bad marriage. You can't fix a bad relationship if it's not meant to be fixed. Counseling and therapy is only going to work with someone who God intends you to be with. See, the problem is we come up with all these things to take God out of the equation. Have y'all noticed that? We've got all these online dating apps. We've got all these quote-unquote coaches, relationship quote-unquote experts. It's just so many different. Just Hilarious is doing life coaching, and, you know, Wendy Williams at one point was doing Ask Wendy, Ask Steve Harvey. It's just like, it's Ask Everybody. But understand who did it first. It was Ask Dadon before anybody. Okay? There was no Ask This, Ask That before it was Ask Dadon almost 20 years later. But we're not going to talk about that. But my point is just be careful with who you ask, because everybody doesn't have the answers. Iyanla Van Zandt ain't got the answers. When Kanye tells Sway, he said, Sway, you ain't got the answers, Sway. You ain't got the answers. Well, guess what? Steve Harvey ain't got the answers either. You know? Just Hilarious damn sure ain't got the answers. Angela Yee ain't got the answers. Let me ask y'all this. Who is giving advice from a biblical perspective these days? Is there anybody that has an ask so-and-so that's actually answering from a biblical standpoint? Because that's who you need to ask. It doesn't have to be me. You can ask Dadon at Gmail. That's fine. But if not me, find someone that's going to steer you in the right direction according to God. Kevin Samuels didn't have the answer. Why? Because he wasn't giving advice from a biblical standpoint. In fact, a lot of the things he said were in direct contradiction to the Bible. Don't take advice from people whose advice contradicts what you believe. It doesn't make sense to do that. But anyway, so my point is, you cannot fix that's not fixable. And I told y'all that on the Risa Tisa show. Okay, check out the archives at dataontolbertshow.com. But what other red flags did she miss? This dude is a drug addict. Was he a drug addict or alcoholic? I forget. I think it might have been both. Didn't he go to rehab or something? Like, let me just tell you. I went to sleep. Me and my wife, we watched it the first night. I think we watched it Saturday night we turned it on. And it was already late. So I get up at 5 o'clock every day. I was tired. So I'm falling asleep. You know, I'm in and out. And then I go online the next day, and I see everybody talking about it. I'm like, yo, so I'm, and I saw most of it. I'm just saying I was in and out. So I'm just like, I just knew how stupid it was. But I see everybody so excited. So I'm like, damn, I got to do a show on this. I got to come back. So I went back, and I rewatched it, and that's where I took all the notes, and I, you know, really watched it with the intent of, you know, doing a show on it. But, you know, I don't remember, was he a drug addict or an alcoholic, but my point is he was an addict. And so those are the types of red flags that a lot of women ignore, overlook, or don't even see because they're like Risa Tisa, because they just wanted it to be their turn. You know, they're tired of being the bridesmaid. They're tired of going to the destination weddings. But she just wanted it to be her turn. So she said, okay, fine. He's a drug addict. Fine. He claims to be a vice president of this company. And he claims, you know, he has an alcohol problem and he's a little abusive. And yeah, he has a couple flirtatious friends. Oh yeah, I opened up Facebook Messenger and I saw him, you know, having sex with somebody for $40 and all this thing. But I just wanted it to be my turn. So at the end of the day, there was no trust here, right? Mia had no trust for her husband. So much so that she hired the private investigator to follow this guy, right? And, you know, and he follows him and, you know, finds out everything that's happening. You know, and we'll talk about how he followed him later on and what he found later on. We'll get to that in a little bit. But let's talk about the mother in law, who he's addicted to. He's addicted to the alcohol, he's addicted to the drugs, and he's addicted to his mom or his psycho mom, you know, who is super against Mia and makes all types of disrespectful comments. They go to the dinner party and, you know, makes all types of, you know, comments about his second wife will appreciate, like his next wife will appreciate her and all these different things. And I guess he was unemployed. And buys his mom a super expensive gift that, you know, they can't even afford or that he couldn't afford. It was just a bunch of craziness. Now, but here's the thing. As crazy as doing that is to have no job, did he say that he sold the piano? He sold their piano to pay for a gift for his mom and didn't even talk to his wife before he sold the piano? Like, what kind of sense does that make? But so as crazy as all of those things are, she was, in my opinion, and, you know, I can't really knock her for this, but she epitomized a non-submissive wife, right? You know, we talk about submission and the definition of submission. And if you listen to my special on the definition of the perfect wife, definition of a great wife, you know, it comes directly from Proverbs 31. You know, that wasn't the first show I've done on that. And over the years, I've done a number of shows where I've broke down that entire verse, the whole Proverbs 31, and analyzed exactly what each of those scriptures means. Check it out if you haven't heard it. But, you know, she wasn't it. I don't think anybody would call Risa Tisa the Proverbs 31 wife. I don't think anyone would call Kelly Rowland, who God is referring to when he talks about Proverbs 31, the virtuous woman. You know, so, but she showed a lack of submission because, well, in a number of ways, but one of the things that stood out to me was she was saying that Zaire was accused of killing his wife and that whole thing, but she threw the bills in his face. Can you imagine that? when she's going, they're going back and forth about whether or not for her to accept this case. And she throws the bill and says, pick one. Which one do you want to pay? What kind of emasculation is that? Like, how does a woman, let alone a wife, say that to her husband? How do you throw bills in his face knowing that he doesn't have a job, saying, well, which one of these bills do you want to pay? I don't care if he is unemployed. I don't care if he has no money. That's not what you do. That's not how you treat a man. Now, again, don't get me wrong. This is clearly not the type of man that any woman should want to be submissive to. I'm not suggesting that he's a quality man who should be submitted to. You'd be a fool to submit to a man like that. But I'm just saying that that's your man. You're with him. If you can't submit, and this is for everybody, if you feel like you can't be submissive to a man for whatever reason, you need to leave that relationship. Like, if you feel like you have to throw the bills in his face, why are you with him? It doesn't make sense. So, again, but like I said, check out just Google the definition of a great wife on the Dayton Tolbert Show, and, you know, a number of shows over the last 20 years should pop up for you, and you can go in and listen to kind of get a better definition of what I mean by a great wife, a submissive wife. But let's get into the Zaire. Let's introduce Zaire into this conversation here. Because like I said, man, he clearly is a man in the dog stage, meaning if you guys checked out the last show on why men cheat, you got to understand why men cheat. You got to understand what stage he's in, right? Don't ever have a boyfriend. Don't ever date somebody if you don't understand what stage he's in. I'm just going to be honest with y'all. Y'all would be crazy to date anybody, to get into any relationship without listening to my special on why men cheat, where I discuss the three stages of men. You got to know what the dog stage means. You got to know what the player stage is. You got to know how to recognize when somebody's in that ready to settle down stage. If you don't know, you're destined to fail, because you might mess around and date a guy thinking in the player stage, thinking he's, you know, ready to be a husband. But was Zaire clearly a man in that? I would say the player stage, because he did have a girlfriend who he allegedly killed, you know, but we'll talk about that. But yeah, so he's accused of killing his girlfriend, a Mexican woman, in a very high profile case. What kind of athlete was he? I may just have missed it. I might have been asleep. But what kind of athlete was this guy? Like, why was he so, how did he get so rich? Was he a football player? Did they even say it? Oh, please don't let him not have said it, bro. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I hope I was asleep when they mentioned it, but I don't remember. Like, why? How did he get his millions? How is he so rich? What kind of athlete was he? I would not be shocked if they just omitted that from the story. But at any rate, Zaire was a very high-profile case that the brother-in-law, who happens to be the DA, Kelly Rowland's brother-in-law, is the district attorney who is prosecuting Zaire. And the DA does not want her to represent him because they feel like it's a conflict of interest. His sister-in-law representing someone that he's trying to put in jail. So that was, a conflict there. Now, there was, for me, the case against him just really made no sense. And again, I think it speaks to the horrible writing of this story. But okay, so he's being arrested. He's out on bail. The one question that I had some questions. Where did all the blood come from? Because if you arrest somebody for killing somebody, you don't have a body, right? Okay, fine. You don't have a body, but they said they found blood, they found skull fragments, right? Okay, in the painting, skull fragments from the young woman in the painting. Okay, how do you get skull fragments? Like, I mean, I'm just asking, where did the skull fragments come from? Where did the blood come from? What did they say? Okay, we're just gonna take some of your blood and squirt it around. So she donated blood to, like, you guys understand what I'm saying? Like, I don't understand. Did they pay her to go along with this whole thing, and then she's just going to disappear? But before you disappear, we're going to need you to just give me, like, 5 pints of blood, and we're going to splatter it around. It doesn't make sense. Now, they said that he took out, and this is what really didn't make sense, he took out a $3 million life insurance policy on her, and he's saying, well, no, I didn't. Well, okay, how do you – he's saying, no, he didn't do it. He's like, I don't know anything about a life insurance policy. But that's evidence being used against him. So how do you – I have life insurance. I don't know if you guys have life insurance, but you can't just take out – someone else can't take out a policy in your name without you knowing about it, right? How do you take out a policy – you can take out a policy on somebody else, but that person has to go along with it, one. And then two, you have to go along with it. So how did these guys who are setting him up take out a whole life insurance policy on his girlfriend that he knew nothing about? How the heck do you do that? That's like somebody taking a life insurance policy out on you. Or me, let's do this, me taking a life insurance policy out on you, and I don't know anything about it. You see how that makes no sense whatsoever? You know what I mean? Like, nobody told Tyler Perry, bro, that doesn't make sense. So I just, again, I like to connect dots and things like that, and that just, the setup, how they set him up didn't make sense. They never even explain how they framed him. Scooby-Doo used to explain stuff better than this. Remember at the end, they catch the dude and they kind of break it all down and like Inspector Gadget, and they show you at the end of the story how exactly the plot went. You know, and he's like, I would have got away with it if it not wasn't for you. You know, it's just like, but that didn't, they never did that. So I don't know, man. It was just like I said, this might be the worst movie I've ever seen, like ever in life. This might be the worst story I've ever read or seen, period. You know, But those are just some questions that I had. But then, you know, she chooses to still represent him. The overwhelming amount of evidence that's against him, even though in reality we just established it really wasn't that much evidence that really made sense. I could have got him off for that. Anybody could have got him off. You know, pause. But you see what I'm saying? So it should not have been that hard. But now. So let's move it forward, because this really doesn't need to be as long as it is, because it just made no sense whatsoever. So Mia decides to take on the case against the wishes of her husband, against the wishes of her brother-in-law DA. And she, not only does she decide to do this, you know, she's having these issues at home. She doesn't trust her husband. They're kind of going through things based on, you know, a number of factors. She decides to meet at Zaire's law. I don't know, like, what they were at the office. They couldn't get the conference room. They couldn't get
the office. They couldn't just, I don't understand. Why do you have to go to his house late at night? Like, not even during the day. I'm just asking, like, why do you have to do that? And you're a married woman. And they don't even explain it. They don't even say, okay, what do you got, a 9-to-5 job, bro? Like, what do you got, a game? Or what, like, why can't we meet during business hours? Like, she never said, like, well, why do I have to come to your loft at 9 o'clock at night? I just don't get that. What logical reason, when you are on trial for murder, does your lawyer have to come to your loft in the middle of the night? You know what I mean? Like, that makes no sense whatsoever. Go get the white man, some old white man who's a great legal mind, a great defense attorney. He's not traveling to his loft at 10 o'clock at night. Come on, man. Like, man, get some old white dude, like, look like Joe Biden, Sleepy Joe. He's not, but kept a sexy black lawyer. She has to go to your loft at 10 o'clock at night to get your statement. Come on, collect evidence. She collected some evidence, all right. You know what I mean? Again, it didn't make sense. So he goes there, and they do this whole flirting thing back and forth. And throughout the process, he says, you know, I want you, you know, admit that you're attracted to me. And she's like, no. He's like, no, admit it. Why won't you admit it? And I'm just watching it like, why? I don't understand. Like, why does she need to admit that she's attracted to him? It just didn't make sense. Like, it didn't serve a purpose. What purpose did her admitting that she was attracted to him serve? What part did that even play in the movie? I mean, clearly she's attracted, so we know how stuff goes. We know there's an attraction there, but why does he need her to admit it? And then when she refuses to admit it, he says, no, I need a new lawyer. You beg her to be your lawyer. The only person that's going to represent you that comes to your house, your loft, in the middle of the night, and now all of a sudden you need a new lawyer. Oh, my goodness. It makes no sense whatsoever. So, but he asks for a new lawyer. She says no. They decide to continue working together. Then all of a sudden, she goes back, and that's when we'll get into it. But let me say this. I'm going to say this. And this is the unfortunate reality of life. And I'm just going to speak about women. We talked about why men cheat. And I'm not sure if I've ever done a show on why women cheat. Now that I'm thinking about it, thousands of shows, I don't think I've ever really focused on the real reasons and that may even be a good topic, actually. I think I will do that at some point, actually. But women, unhappy women, or I'll say women who are in unhappy marriages, are often some of the biggest hoes out there. And I hate that, and that's no disrespect, but it's the reality. And what do I mean by that? Because what we saw in Mia Culpa is, you know, as far as her hoish actions, it's not uncommon for what I see regularly from women out here in these streets. You know, women who are, and this is just what all men know. I'm not telling men, and maybe you got women don't know this, or I'm not sure how you feel, but as a man, and I'm 46, I know a lot of women who are out there. And as I've gotten older, the women that I encounter, back when I first started, I was, you know, doing life coaching and talking to these women, you know, single women, no kids or one kid, or, you know, never been married, trying to get married. But now as I've been doing this longer and the women who follow me have gotten older, now I see more and more women who are divorced or who have been with their boyfriends, fiancés, marriages for, you know, 5 years, 10 years, whatever. And a lot of them are very unhappy. And the things that I've seen from these women, the things that they have done and are willing to do, simply because of their unhappiness, is wild. You know, I'm just telling you, y'all know what I'm talking about. Like, I'm talking about these girls' trips. You know, a lot of my clients are very open with me. They tell me about things that not only things they have done, but things they have seen their girlfriends do. Women who have no reason to lie, like, yo, bro, you know, I went on this cruise, and, you know, most of the women we went on this cruise together, they're married, but the things that I saw happen on that cruise, their husbands will never know about. And it's just like there's a lot of that type of behavior, a lot of affairs going on, a lot of women who literally hate their husbands and are looking for reasons and opportunities to cheat. Maybe it's because their husband is cheating. Maybe it's because they feel like they want to get into the revenge cheating, or maybe they're just hoes and that's just what they like to do. But it's a number of things. But I'm just telling you this because what we saw in this film is indicative of what happens with a lot of unhappy wives out there, whether it's their personal trainer, whether it's their ex-boyfriend, whether it's their coworker. There's a lot of creeping going on. There's a lot of work husbands out there. And what Mia Culpa did, see, the thing about it is Mia, she had no problem going to his loft at nighttime. Why? Because she was an unhappy wife. She didn't even want to give her husband. If you look, when she gave her husband some ass, she was very unsatisfied. She didn't want to be doing that. He tried to hit it in the bathroom, and she was like, no, I got to go to work. She didn't want to give it to him at all. But then when she finally gave it to him, he was all passed out. Like, she didn't enjoy that. She wanted to be ravaged. Some of you out there in movie land watched it so intently because you want to be ravaged. You deep down want a man like Trevante. You want a man like Zaire to ravage you, to cover you in paint, to take your hand and let you, you know, draw the blue paint on the painting, the easel. You wanted that. You want what he gave her. You fantasized the way she fantasized about him on the train. Remember, she rode the train home, and she fantasized about him. Some of these women out there, some of you maybe, fantasize about your Zaire, whoever he may be. And that's the real reason everybody on my Facebook timeline, on Instagram timeline is saying, oh, my gosh, this movie was so good. No, the movie wasn't good. That sex scene was, though. You know what I'm saying? Because you can relate to it. See, people like things that they can relate to. Your favorite song right now, whatever it may be, whether it's SZA, whether it's old school Mary J. Blige, Toni Braxton, you can relate to it. You know? You love it because it resonates with you. Just like this movie resonates with you. Kelly Rowland's character resonates with you because you have dated a man like Zaire. Your husband is like her loser husband. You sat down and watched 4 hours of Risa Tisa's ass, you know, tell that story because you can relate to Legion. You can relate to Risa. Some of y'all look like Risa. You know what I mean? No disrespect. I'm just saying, you look like Risa. Some of y'all not every. Some of y'all look like her. So you can relate to her plight. Just like she wanted it to be her turn, you want it to be your turn also. And so all I'm telling y'all is that a lot of these women who are unhappy in these marriages, unhappy in these relationships, will often go out and have these one-night stands with these men in the dog stage and the player stage, and the next thing you know, they end up on Maury Povich talking about some, I'm not sure who the father is. You go on the girls' trip. You go on the cruise. You have a few drinks. Next thing you know, you're letting Zaire hit it. It might not be the body paint, but it might just be after a few drinks. And that's the reality of it. We can act like it's not. We can act like it's far-fetched. But this is probably one of the most realistic movies out there. It's not a good movie, but it's a real movie. You know what I mean? It's not number one in the world for no reason. Because people can, it's number one because people can relate to it. People can see themselves in Kelly Rowland, right? But so why did what led to Kelly Rowland going all the way? What was the straw that broke the camel's back? Well, she got a call from her private investigator friend who says, "Yo, I see your friend. I see your husband. He's in the hotel room, you know, whatever room it was, room 112. He's with a woman." She's like, "What? What?" Just like, you know how your girlfriend calls you, "Girl, you're not going to believe this. I see your man out with this bitch. Remember that bitch that he said was just his friend? I'm in the club right now. I see him hugged up. I see him hugged up right now with her." She's like, "Oh, word? Picture for me. Send me a picture." So now you see a girl, you see girls out there trying to take your picture, you know what I mean? I see that type of stuff all the time, man. I'll tell y'all a funny story about that later, but, you know, and it's just interesting because, you know, that's how it goes. It's that revenge, that rage that women feel when they find out that their man is cheating, or get that confirmation, or so they thought, confirmation that their man is cheating, that for a lot of women is enough to send them over the edge and just give that ass away. You know? And that's what happened with Kelly Rowland. He told her, he said, "Look, I see your man. He's here in the hotel right now." And then next thing you know, she makes a decision to give that ass up to Zaire. The only problem with that is he wasn't even cheating. That's crazy. He wasn't even. It's crazy and it's ironic. You know, because this is someone who had cheated in the past and was probably still cheating. He just wasn't cheating at that moment. And so because she thinks he's cheating, that, I guess, takes away the guilt in that moment and allows herself to feel somewhat comfortable giving her body to a male whore. You know, I thought it was interesting because how it all went down. And like I told y'all, some of these unhappy wives, bro, like, I've seen some hoes out here. Like, trust me, I can tell y'all some stories and have told y'all stories about some loose women, women who've done some freaky things. But I'm telling y'all, man, these married women, women in relationships that are unhappy, often who are willing to do some of the most freakiest things the world has ever seen. It's not the single women with the hope, right? It's not the young women with the hope that they'll still meet their knight in shining armor, the women who still go to church and still pray for a man. You know, y'all know what I'm talking about. The women who are still young enough to believe, "Oh, I can still meet somebody. We can still have a kid or two kids. And I might already have one kid, but I'm willing to give him two more or whatever. You know, so I'm going to still go to church. I'm going to still pray for a husband." But a lot of times, the older you get, and I'm, you know, you guys understand where I'm going with this. The older you get, a lot of times the faith that you once had, it's subsided, right? You know, because, like, the things that you're now, they're, like, certain things you're not willing to do because you don't want to really mess things up for your future, right? But when you have reconciled the fact that 45 and 46 or even 42 maybe, you know what? Maybe this whole relationship thing isn't in the cards for me. You know, if it happens, it happens. Maybe I'm just meant to be single. I've heard different variations in the thousands even. Women have told me, maybe it's just meant for me to be single, you know. And I, as much as I tell them, no, that's not the case. God can bless you with love. It doesn't matter the age or what. You just have to have, they're really not trying to hear it. So what I'm telling y'all is, especially when these women have been with someone, they're not even single. they're actually married. They're actually in a relationship. That faith is gone. They're like, look, I'm just going to stay with this guy. I'm just going to, you know, do what I got to do, and I'm going to have a little friend on the side. And the things they do for that friend on the side, man, it's you know, it's crazy. And so that's what we saw with Mia in the film. She goes to his loft. She decides to, you know, they have their talk or whatever. She sees him. Crazy. Like, she sees him. First of all, they go to the sex party or whatever. She sees all that. Then she sees him actually getting head, oral sex, from a young woman right in front of her. Right? And he makes sure that she sees what's happening. She tries to leave. And that's when she gets the call. That's when she gets the call from the private investigator. She was just going to leave. But the confirmation that her husband was cheating is what made her go back upstairs and give her body away, allow herself to be a hoe. Because he was smashing the chick. He didn't shower. He didn't wash. He literally, yo, that's some nasty stuff right there, bro. Like, she didn't even care. No condom. No nothing. Nasty ass. Kelly wrote. And the crazy thing is, you know, we see so much judgment out there. But of all the comments and all the reviews and all this stuff that I've seen, like, I've seen women bash fictional characters. Oh, he's just a piece of shit. I can't stand his ass. Oh, he's this, he did that. Like Michael Beach in Soul Food. Or Michael Beach in Waiting to Exhale. Women hated him. They hated his character. But I literally haven't seen anyone calling Mia a hoe. Where we have a married woman having unprotected sex with a man who just got finished having sex with some white chick. I ain't never, like, remember in Love Jones? And check out my special on Love Jones back in the day. All-time classic show, man. If you don't ever listen to another show, go back and listen to my special on Love Jones where I broke down that whole story. But remember in Love Jones where she has sex Lorenz Tate? And she was like, girl, you a hoe. She said, girl, you a hoe. Where are the girlfriends of today that call women out on their hoish behavior? Because back in the day, I used to, like, women used to hold women accountable. You know, if you were going to be a hoe back in the day, you at least had to hide it. You know what I'm saying? You couldn't just be a hoe out in the open. You had to hide your hoishness. Now, like, at least from your closest girlfriends, you couldn't just admit to being a hoe. You had to lie. Like, nah, we just chill. Oh, you fucked him, didn't you? Nah. We didn't. Nah. We just made out a little bit, knowing damn well, you know what I mean. But now it's like, that word has become taboo. You don't even hear women calling other women hoes nowadays. Now being a hoe is celebrated. You look at the Sexy Red, City Girls. Not only are women being hoes, but they're charging for it. They said, look, if I'm going to be a hoe, I'm going to at least get paid to be a hoe. Being a hoe is celebrated. So we went from women protesting being objectified in film, television, and movies, and things like that. Now it's celebrated. I haven't seen or heard anybody criticizing me as, well, it's just a movie, Dayton. It's just a, well, yeah, Love Jones was just a movie, too. There's a lot of movies, you know, and TV shows where people, characters, fictional characters are criticized. You know, I mean, of course, it's just a movie, but I'm just saying I haven't seen any criticism of that aspect of it. Why? Well, because of the reasons I just told you. So many women can relate to it. You're not going to call somebody a hoe and you just had a one-night stand last night. You just got back from the girls' trip. You just got off the cruise from Cancun. You know what happened in Cancun stays in Cancun. So, of course, you're not going to criticize me. You know what I mean? You just had somebody over to try to recreate the scene at Mia Copa. He said, look, bring that body paint over. You know what I'm saying? But this is hoish behavior. So what I'm saying to y'all is you guys got to understand that, you know, it all starts with ignoring the red flags by staying with someone that you're unhappy with. If you have to feel like you would want to be a hoe or allow yourself to be taken out of your character because of what someone that you're with did, that's the wrong person to be with. If you have to do what Mia did because of what she feels like her husband is doing, don't sacrifice your self-respect and dignity for a loser. What did Risa say? I told y'all this on the Risa show. Risa said, I felt like getting my lick back. I told y'all last week that's what she wanted to do. Risa wanted to go do the same thing Mia did. How about that? I told y'all that before I even saw Mia Copa. I told y'all that last week. That's crazy. Let's think about what I'm saying to y'all. Risa Tisa wanted to cheat on Legion for the same exact reason Mia cheated on her husband. How about you just don't date a Legion? How about you just don't date the husband and Mia Copa? Then you ain't got to do all that. You ain't got to. You can continue being classy. You ain't got to be a hoe. Just don't date a loser. Let's keep it moving, man. So she quits the case after she gives up the ass. She ghosts her. She said, nah, bro, you're done. Like, I'm done, because she finds out that he has a history and a pattern of doing this type of stuff with different women. I don't know what she thought. I don't know if she thought, you know, they were going to live happily ever after. I don't know, like, if he thought they were being, that was romance or what, but he decides, no, I can't do this anymore. I quit. You need to find yourself another attorney. And then she goes to see the art gallery chick. And can y'all answer this question for me? What purpose did she serve in the film? Because I still don't see the purpose that she served. She went to go see her at, you know, what can you tell me about Zaire? And she basically, she says, oh, you fucking him yet? She's like, whatever. She's like, yeah, you are. Of course she is. Just like he smashed her, she smashed the older art gallery chick. But, okay, what's the point of it? What was the point of that visit? What point did that character serve in the film? He used the same seduction on both of them, okay. But what? I mean, I'm asking y'all that it's rhetorical. The question is rhetorical. She served no purpose. No purpose in the story whatsoever. I think Tyler Perry might have been drunk, man. That's what it was. Tyler Perry was drunk when he wrote this. You know, because there's no – I don't even think Tyler – well, he stole this. He did it. He stole this from Zane. This ain't even Tyler Perry's – you know, I refuse to believe Tyler Perry sat down and said, I'm going to write this story, and this is the best I can come up with. Nah, I just can't – I can't believe it. He must have been drunk, man. He might have been at Diddy's freak-off party when he came up with this story, man. He was a little preoccupied. But anyway, that whole Diddy situation is crazy. I might have to do a show discussing freak-offs. Not necessarily Diddy's freak-offs, but some of y'all freak-offs. No, I can't wait. That's going to be a cool headline. What happens at the freak-off stays at the freak-off. Hey, let me ask y'all a question. How many of y'all are going to watch the Hulu documentary on Freaknik? Y'all going to watch the Freaknik documentary? I never made it down to Freaknik, but I've been to the Greek picnic, you know, in Philly. So I know some of y'all hit the Freaknik. Some of y'all, I got a lot of listeners down south and some old enough to remember what the Freaknik was like. You know, I just don't let me see y'all in the video, man. Just tell Hulu to, you know, blot y'all faces out, man. I don't want to see any of my Facebook friends or listeners on the Freaknik documentary, man, up there twerking on the cars and stuff. But I already know some of y'all were in Philly because I seen y'all. I seen y'all in Philly at the Greek. But anyway, but look out for the Freak Off show coming up soon. That might, I might just do that for fun. I might bring that back for Keeping It Real Fridays, man. Oh, the Freak Off on Keeping It Real Friday. Stay tuned. We'll see. But we'll talk about some of these Freak Offs, man, because they happen. I had some Freak Offs back in the day. Y'all know, I mean, I've told y'all stories. You know, it is what it is. College, early 20s. You know, but we'll talk more about that. So let's keep it moving. So they set him up, right? Okay, we figured that, we've established that the setup, the way that they set him up, literally made no sense whatsoever. But what really, really made no sense, and this is probably the most ridiculous part of the entire film, Kelly Rowland quits the case. She decides to take a vacation to Punta Cana, Dominican Republic. I think she was in Punta Cana. Beautiful place. I went to Puerto Plata in Dominican Republic years ago, and it was just one of the most beautiful places I've ever been to. Just absolutely beautiful. Beautiful women, beautiful beaches, beautiful weather, beautiful everything. So she decides to go to Dominican Republic, and she is randomly walking around, and she just happens to run into the woman that Zaire supposedly killed. And again, I've watched, you know, probably thousands of movies, read tons and tons of books, and that has to be the most far-fetched and unrealistic thing I've ever seen in my life. How do you, first of all, what kind of photos did she see of this young woman? I didn't really see it. Maybe y'all saw it, but I'm sure they had photos of her. But you just happened, you never saw her in person. You just happened to see a picture of someone, and in passing, someone runs by you or walks by you, and you just happen to recognize her in a whole other country from a picture. Like, are you serious? Like, I mean, nobody in Tyler Perry's camp thought that made no sense and was extremely unrealistic. Like, imagine just going somewhere and you happen to see a picture of my ex-girlfriend that I happen to be with. I've been married for 15 years. So let's say I had a girlfriend from 20 years ago, and you go into another country, a whole other country, and say, yo, you recognize my ex-girlfriend based on a picture that you saw of her a few times. Are you like, come on, man. Are you serious? Stop. She's like, hey, you're so-and-so. You're supposed to be dead. And she's like, what? No, I'm not. And so she runs away, and she sprays her with the stuff, and he escapes. Oh, my gosh, man. I've never seen anything more unrealistic than that in my entire life. I've seen sci-fi movies when aliens descend upon the planet and abduct people that are more realistic than that scene right there. But what was even more interesting is that, and unrealistic, is that, first of all, she's Mexican. So you have a woman who is supposedly of Mexican descent working as a maid in the Dominican Republic. Is that, wow, that's craziness. Like, that doesn't even make any sense. I mean, I get if she's Mexican and you want her to be hidden, you don't want to send her back to Mexico. So you send her, but if you're going to send her away, wow, and she's Mexican and her family is, or maybe she was never Mexican, or maybe that was the, or maybe this whole thing just doesn't make a lick of sense. How about that? You know what I mean? I'm sitting there trying to make sense of it, because I remember they said there was no record of her. There was no record of her in Mexico. And that they were trying to figure out, why is there no record? So maybe she was never even Mexican. Maybe she was Dominican, and that's why she ran into her in the Dominican Republic. Okay, so that would kind of make sense. But why was she pretending to be Mexican, though? Why did any – who thought she was Mexican? Why not just say from the beginning? Like, why would he have thought she was Mexican? Wouldn't he have known her true origin if that's his girlfriend? But at any rate, she's working as a maid. Now, if you guys know anything about maids in the – first of all, Dominican Republic is very – is one of the third or fourth poorest countries in the entire world. So they make no money, like literally, trust me, like I know they make no money at all. They might make like $200 a month or something like it's crazy. So I would think that if you had a woman who was going to go along with this elaborate scheme to set up Zaire, wouldn't they have had to pay her significantly for her to disappear? And I would think that they would set her up so she could live comfortably and just kind of just stay off the radar and never have to come back to America and all, you know, this and that. So if they paid her off, they have money, why would she be working as a maid where she makes no money? It just doesn't make any sense at all. But at any rate, they find her in the DR. She calls, of all people, she calls her DA brother-in-law, not her private investigator with no proof whatsoever. She calls, well, she did call the private investigator, but she calls the brother, the police. And this guy, you know, he does what he's supposed to do. He kind of tries to, you know, shut the whole thing down, whatever like that. He says, look, just come back home. Come back. He says, oh, okay, I'll come back to the place where everybody hates me. You don't like me. The mom hates me. Everybody, you know, so I'm just going to go back and hope that you guys handle this whole situation, which also makes no sense. What she should have done is get proof, wait for her guy to get proof of existence of this young woman, and then take that information directly to the judge, not the DA, who is clearly not on your side. You take it to the judge, and the judge could have. She could have just gone right to the judge. The judge could have examined the evidence and be like, okay, this woman is clearly not dead, so we're going to go ahead and dismiss the case. She didn't. She could have totally superseded the DA altogether. But anyway, again, it made no sense. But she gets back to the house, and the plan becomes revealed, you know, that he said, and this is, again, the worst part of the story. It becomes revealed that his whole goal was to set up Zaire and put him away for murder, which would catapult his campaign for mayor. Makes no sense whatsoever. If you are a successful DA, you're a successful DA. If you look around the country, most mayors have some type of, I'm not going to say most, but a lot, there are many mayors that have been former district attorneys and have a tough history on crime and prosecution and things like that. You don't have to fabricate, you know, a murder, you know, and then a conviction to become mayor. Makes no sense. It just makes the mom turned out to be lying about having cancer. And I still don't know why did the mom, maybe I just missed it, but tell me again why the mom had to lie about having cancer. Why did she do that again? I don't, because what does the mom having cancer have to do with the DA setting up Zaire? I did not see that. I don't see the correlation between the two. They could have did everything they had to do, and the mom just doesn't have cancer. So why were they pretending the mom had cancer? Somebody text me. Please text me or inbox me or something or whatever about just if you know why, because I don't know why. And, you know what I mean? But the mom ends up killing the district attorney's wife, who also cheated on him with Zaire. So Zaire smashed the art gallery chick, Mia, and the district attorney's wife. Okay. Zaire must, you know, he must be a player. That's a true player from the Himalayas. You know what I mean? He's an international player, literally. Killing people in DR, Mexico, all types of stuff. But now, I wanted to save the, again, I told y'all, this is one of the worst movies I've ever seen. It's one of the most unrealistic movies I've ever seen. But, and we just talked about a number of completely ludicrous plot twists. But this is probably the most unrealistic and stupidest scene of any movie that I've ever seen in my entire life. She's running away. She finally escapes from everybody. She escapes from the house. She's running down the street. And all the of all the cars that could be pulling up and passing, she's like, help me, help me. It just happens to be her husband. Just happens randomly. He just happened to be coming down the street at the exact moment where she just happens to escape from the house. And she gets into the house, gets into the car, and then he starts driving her back to the house, presumably to kill her, which also really made no sense. Because tell me again, what was his motivation? Like I said, I zoned out, man. I don't know, man. I don't even remember. Like, what was his motivation for wanting her dead or for even going along with the plan? It just didn't make sense. He's got a family of psychos. Was it money or I don't? What was the husband going to get out of the whole thing? I just didn't get it. Maybe I have to rewatch that end part. Maybe they explained it, but it doesn't seem like it made sense. But the stupidest thing to me, was as she realized that he was going to kill her, she sees a tractor trailer. She sees a tractor trailer coming towards them. She unbuckles her seatbelt, or unbuckles his seatbelt, and causes the car to swerve into head-on traffic and have a head-on collision with the tractor trailer, but only the car would only hit his side, not her side. Does that even make sense? If you're trying to get away from someone, you're being kidnapped by somebody, would you think to cause the car to swerve into head-on, have a head-on collision, but only on half of the car? Why would she think she would not be killed? Again, I'm telling y'all, I have never seen anything as stupid and as unrealistic as that scene right there. I promise you, I've never seen anything. That's like literally the stupidest thing I've ever seen anyone do in the history of movies, is cause a car to swerve, but only hitting half the car so that you live and the driver dies. That's the dumbest thing I've ever seen in my life. She would have been better off unlocking the door and just diving out of the side of the car. That would have made more sense. She would have had a better chance of living doing that than causing a car to swerve into oncoming traffic. But the last thing, and this isn't as crazy, but it is crazy nonetheless. He dies. Everybody, you know, goes to jail, I guess. They uncover the plot. It's, okay, great. But the mom, if you go back a few scenes, the mom stepped on her phone and breaks her phone. So the dude, after everything is sorted out, he texts her, says, hey, thank you. You know, I love to see you, or whatever the heck he says. And she takes the phone and she throws it in the trash. And I'm thinking, yo, bro, you just got the phone. You just got a new phone. You just got that phone. Who throws away a phone? Why did she throw away the phone? Because it's not like that was a burner. And I really thought about this. Did anybody think about this? The way they had been communicating was through text, right? And through the phone. So all of the calls, all the phone, all the texts were in the original phone that the mom broke. So if somebody breaks your phone, you go to the store and you get the replacement phone. So this is only a few weeks maybe after all of that stuff transpired. So why, and I know this doesn't seem like it's major, but why would you just throw the phone that you just got replaced into the trash? Which, like, what, you still need a phone, right? Why not just delete the message? Why not just block him? Why do you got to throw away your whole phone? That's like me getting into an argument with you, and instead of just blocking you or deleting your messages, throw my whole phone in the trash. What kind of weird stuff is, I'm sorry, y'all, that did it for me, man. I said, yo, and she throws the phone in the trash and she just walks off. What's that? I know my phone. I got an Android. My wife has the new iPhone. I have the new Android. Why would you throw away an iPhone? These phones cost over $1,000. She's rich. She's not just getting a cheap Cricket phone or, you know, what do you call those things? It's not the Obama phone. That was a real phone she was using. But anyway, all right, I'm not to belabor that, but that was literally the stupidest move I've ever seen. I'm sorry, y'all. I know this was different from a lot of the other shows that I've done where we have these in-depth analyzations of these movies and shows and things like that, but I just had to do a show on mea culpa because, you know, I only do shows that I'm passionate about one way or another. And I'm passionate about this because I've literally never seen a worse movie than this, man. But look, I appreciate y'all for listening, man. This is only for y'all, man. Y'all begged me to watch. Y'all, I'm mad at y'all. Y'all made me, I didn't even want to watch the movie. Y'all made me watch it. Y'all made me watch it, and then you made me talk about it. But I still have to say, if you guys missed any of the last few shows that I've done, the Why Men Cheat, the Real Reasons That Men Cheat show, the Cat Williams show. If you missed the Cat Williams, check that out. Risa Tisa, How to Avoid Dealing with the Psycho. Check that show out. Any and all shows are available at DataOnTolbertShow.com, iTunes, all that good stuff. Add yourselves to the Friends of the Data on Tolbert Show Facebook group. We have some really great discussions in the group every day. Follow me at Data on Tolbert. YouTube is at Data on Twitter, all that good stuff, man. I thank y'all for listening. And look out for I still need to do part two. As I told y'all, if you guys remember, I did the show on why men cheat, the real reasons that men cheat. But that was part one. Part two of that show will be discussing Cater to You, my second installment on Cater to You part two, how to sustain your relationship, the three ways a man must be fulfilled. We'll talk about how to fulfill a man mentally, emotionally, spiritually, sexually, all that good stuff. So that'll be part two because it's all tied into the real reasons that men cheat. If he's not fulfilled, he's most likely going to cheat. So you don't want to miss that show, man. But look, thank y'all for listening, and I will see y'all next time. Peace.
your motivation. Child of Dayton, Tobor, come and rock your world. Let Dayton be your motivation. Child of Dayton, Tobor, motivate you, girl. Let Dayton be your motivation. Child of Dayton, Tobor, come and change your world. You don't ever have to settle for less. You don't have to be a fool. Call them up, let the tears fall down. Tell them how you feel so. Little girl, don't be lost anymore. This brother has a master plan. Lean on his wisdom if you feel weak. I guarantee it will help you stand.
Motivation, tell it, they don't talk.